Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Alec Emmons about the service to school. Then Nick Catarino will discuss about his fight on behalf of those injured by COVID vaccine. And Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So, it's a pleasure to introduce Navy vet Alec Emmons. He's the Chief Executive Officer for Service to School. Glad you could join us, Alec.
Good to be here.
Alec, start by talking about your time in the Navy. Why did you join? I know you went to the Naval Academy. Why'd you go? What'd you do after you graduated?
Yeah, so originally from the DC area, my father was a Foreign Service Officer. So I spent most of my childhood overseas. A lot of it was in South America. And for me, I was in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and Navy ships would frequently pull in there. And growing up, we were given the opportunity to tour them. And so that kind of gave me that early interest in the Navy. We went back to DC, where I went to high school, which is right down the road from Annapolis. So having that early interest in the Navy and then touring Annapolis a few times when I was in high school just made the Naval Academy the absolute number one place I wanted to go and join the Navy afterwards. So went to Annapolis, started in 2001, graduated in 2005, service selected nuclear submarines. I was a nuclear submarine officer for about 5 years. So I did it's a standard process where you do, you know, about a year, year and a half of training as a submarine officer. Then you go to your ship to fill out your five-year commitment. So in that time, I deployed to the Middle East twice. I was based in Norfolk, Virginia. And then after that, I went to Naval Forces Central Command Headquarters to be a watch officer. I was there in 2010, 2011 time period. There was a lot going on there, a lot of piracy. And I was also there for the Arab Spring of 2011. So it was a pretty intense time. I was then offered the opportunity to spend a year in Naples, Italy, as an international engagement planner at destroyer squadron there. So I got the chance to go to Ukraine, do some planning there, which was very fortuitous because I'm kind of seeing the effects of the groundwork we laid in 2012, a decade later. So left active duty end of 2012, and then I entered the reserves. So that was my military service. Outside of the military, I got my MBA from the Wharton School. I work for McKinsey & Company as a consultant, and I've recently taken over as CEO of Service to School.
Okay, so it sounds like you aren't bored. I spent about 4 hours once on a submarine, and I'm 6'3", and I found every single piece of metal about 6 feet above the deck. So I never wanted to be on it, so I'm glad you took care of that kind of stuff, because I never wanted to do that. You're now at Service to Schools. What does Service to School do? I presume it does it for military people, but give us your mission and how you do it.
Yeah, so at the most basic level, we get veterans into college. And so if you're a U.S. military veteran and you served your country honorably, whether you want to go to community college or get a PhD, we will help you get there. We've got a team of over 500 near-peer mentors who provide free support to veterans who would like to go to college. So we've got people who've done everything from, like we said, from undergraduate degrees to PhDs. There's an academic program you're interested in, we've got somebody who can help you get there. So with that said, the bulk of our effort is spent towards getting enlisted veterans into undergraduate school. So about 70%+ of our applicants are enlisted veterans, and the majority of them are first-generation college students. And so our goal is to really give them the good information they need to get into a school that will set them up for professional success.
It's my guess then that you are a mentor as opposed to someone who pays for them to go to college. Am I right?
Yes, we're mentors. So we get them to college. The great benefit veterans have is the GI Bill. So there are so many great schools in this country that along with the GI Bill will provide our veterans with a free education. So we get veterans there and then we educate them on the benefits that they can receive. But as of now, we have some scholarships available to veterans, which are competitive. But the bulk of our work is involved in getting those veterans into college.
That's awesome. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking about Service to School. Well, I taught college for about 15 years. And yes, there are a lot of veterans who come to school really not knowing even how to get any benefits, knowing that there's supposed to be some out there, but don't have a clue. So your job is, or your role is to get them smart, knowing what to apply, how to apply, that kind of stuff. Am I right?
Yeah. You know, how to fill out a college application. And then the big thing we have is that mentorship program I discussed, our ambassador program, where veterans, they often struggle in how to describe their military service in a way that a admissions committee member at a civilian college can understand. So when veterans first come to us, a lot of times they'll have essays that are filled with acronyms that aren't very clear about the magnitude of the impact they made within their unit. And our goal is to really help those veterans put their best foot forward and convey their story in a way that someone with no military experience can understand.
You know, that's a really valid point, because even we military people, I don't understand all the acronyms and stuff my Navy and Air Force friends use. And for some reason, they don't understand the Army stuff I use sometimes. And if we can't do it within the military, certainly in the civilian world, we need to speak their language because we're coming into their world. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So I can certainly see how that's true and how taking your military experience and putting it into phrases that the average college person, administrator, can understand. That's got to be a whole lot of what you do, and it's got to be really successful, I would guess.
It has been. And so some of our statistics, so we've been around for a little over a decade. And in that time, we've worked with over 15,000 veterans. And some of our results have been really impressive. So our flagship program is called VetLink. It's been around for about 6 years, and it's a partnership we have with 28 highly selective colleges across the country. For example, 6 of the 8 Ivy League schools are our partners. Others like Stanford and MIT are partners as well. And what we have as part of this program is called the VetLink Addendum. And it's an addition to the standard application for these schools. And what it does is it's about a 5-page form our veterans will fill out, where they are essentially forced to describe their military experience. You know, it'll ask, like, what awards did you get? Why did you get those awards? And so, for example, you can say, you know, a veteran would say, I got a Navy Achievement Medal. That's great. A admissions committee member is not going to understand what that award means. But when that veteran is made to write out a description for that award, it really shows that admissions committee member the impact that that veteran made to get that award. So they will fill out this addendum to the application and submit it along with the application. And that's really the tool we use to translate that military experience into something that those admissions committee representatives can understand. And so just throwing out a few statistics on our success. So for example, this past year, Princeton University was our top destination for veterans. We got 26 veterans into Princeton, and our acceptance rate there was about 30%. Although 30% doesn't sound that high, you got to keep in mind that Princeton's overall acceptance rate is under 5%. So our applicants who are military veterans had a 6 times higher success rate than your standard applicant. And these are basically high school students who are some of the country's best and the brightest. So we've had some great success overall. And that's just one of many schools. You know, I could go down all the stats, but it would take all day. And I know you don't have that kind of time.
Yep. We are about out of time. Talk to us about how a listener who's interested in either supporting you, because I know you're a 501c3, or plugging into you to get your assistance, how can they plug into you? How can they communicate?
So the easiest way to do it is to go to our website, service2school.org. And on there are links to request an ambassador. So basically, there's an intake form you can fill out. If you want to volunteer to be an ambassador, you can do that there as well. There's a form you'll fill out there as well. And of course, we always appreciate donations. So if you would like to help us continue the good work we're doing, there's a donate button as well. So we would never turn down any donation. So thank you so much for giving me the time to talk today, Denny.
Alec, thank you for sharing this today, because I've never shared this information before. And we're in our 17th year. I don't feel quite so dumb now, because now we've shared it. And thank you for your service to our nation's veterans, and thank you for your service to our nation while you're in uniform. We're friends. We have to stay in touch.
Absolutely.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for some deep knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
There's no doubt veterans sacrifice in service to this country. For decades now, troops have been sent around the globe to fight. putting their lives on the line, but with no clear U.S. interest to protect.
To honor that sacrifice, Concerned Veterans for America is working to end our nation's endless wars. As veterans ourselves, we know a better foreign policy can make our troops and our country safer.
Learn more about how you can help by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome Nick Catarano. Nick is running the COVID Tyranny Task Force based in Collier County, Florida. They launched an initiative to enlist county sheriffs in an effort to bring justice to vax-injured individuals by holding healthcare providers, schools, businesses, etc., accountable for maintaining a vaccine standard that's killed 20 million people across the world and injured 2.2 billion. Nick is a concerned citizen who didn't just gripe about things, he went to work on the matter. I'm proud to call you friend. Welcome, Nick.
Dennis, thanks for having me, and thanks for being willing to talk about a subject that many consider taboo or many are wanting to move on from. But it's a really important topic as many of our neighbors, friends, loved ones are being detrimentally affected. And many of them in the shadows, many of them are still scared to talk about what they're going through. So it's a really important conversation that I'm really grateful to have. And just for a note, I was asked to join the team of the Collier County Task Force, which is Scott Kiley, his wife, Jill, Dr. Richard Schroeder, some great citizens down there. And they just reached out. We became friends through mutual friends, and we're working together on some of these initiatives. So I'm just a team member, but I'm very outspoken, and I have a lot of energy for trying to bring truth to and justice and accountability.
And that's so important, because if we don't do it in this issue, who knows what other things will be done to use us. So your points are really well made. And since this is a military talk radio show, our military has been very severely damaged by this crisis, and none of our leaders spoke up against it. Nobody stood up. So, Nick, talk about your efforts. You're a citizen. You saw the issue, and you got active. Talk about what you've done.
Long story short, I was just a blue-collar worker at Walt Disney Company. I've been there 18 years. I was a top union leader. Even though I was conservative-minded, I rose to the top because I allowed people to live and let, you know, that mentality of live and let live. I let them have their ways of thinking, but I was involved because I wanted to make a difference in the lives of the employees, and I was very effective at it. So I enjoyed it. But when I heard the mandates were coming down and I got COVID and my wife got COVID and we got better using ivermectin after a severe bout, my mom, 73, all kind of comorbidities, kidney disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, the same thing. We got her better with ivermectin after the hospital sent her home, said there was nothing more they could do for her. I realized there was something wrong. And as I wrestled with it, and I wrestled in prayer, I ended up writing an open letter. I created a website along with friends from CDF, Citizens Defending Freedom at the time, where I hooked up with goofyvaccine.com. And I have my open letter there. And that began my fight against the mandates and the idea that these shots were fix-all and that the early treatments they were suppressing. To create the EOA, I was trying to warn people. I think as we talked off air originally, I felt like you did, that people were just making a mistake doing the best they could. But the longer I've been in this and the longer I connect the dots and I've seen all the responses, especially now, sure, there were people that meant well and were trying to do the right thing, but it's been clear to me that they have deliberately unleashed this on us, and this was all part of a program. Stuff that I can't begin to understand, because, you know, good people don't think like that. But they clearly knew what they were doing, and suppressing early treatments, bumping up COVID numbers, using death incentivized protocols in the hospitals like remdesivir, vens, barbiturates. All that was part of the plan to raise fear to a fever pitch, and then to offer us the one solution thing, which is the It's not even a vaccine. It's a shot, and really, it's a bioweapon.
Well, I agree with you. And to me, it was crazy when ivermectin and some other things that came along, all of a sudden, they were evil. Normally, and anything people want to try, anything their doctor wants to take a shot at, is acceptable, if you know, as long as they do it reasonably. But all these other things, they were evil. They were bad, that your insurance couldn't cover it. Your doctor would be dismissed if he used it. That's never happened. I'm 82. That's never happened in my lifetime. So clearly, this was not just a normal response to a disease.
Right. Yeah. And with ivermectin in particular, you know, it's one of the safest drugs on the planet. It is like the miracle drug, won a Nobel Prize for outstanding work in humans. And even till very recently, I have family that's in the medical profession that I kept recommending ivermectin for a family member. And they were like freaking out because it causes liver damage. And I'm thinking, more than Tylenol? It's like 100 times less than Tylenol. You're taking Tylenol? But yet it's that mind trick they've done on people, where they just couldn't get past the barriers of the fear that they induced on people. And ivermectin is like this wonder drug. And just the other day, the FDA finally admitted, oh no, ivermectin's good for COVID. You know, we never stopped the doctors from using ivermectin for COVID, which is a total gaslight, a total lie. It was so difficult. Here in Florida, we have a great doctor, Dr. Littell, who spoke up about ivermectin and tried to use it in the hospitals. And they went after his board certification over it. So it's really evil when you think of, like, the FDA now saying it's okay. The millions of people that probably have died, they like to point to the numbers of death. But by suppressing early treatments, it wasn't just ivermectin. It was ivermectin. It was hydroxychloroquine. It was budesonide. There's all kinds of nutraceuticals. During the first wave of COVID, my wife and I were sending care packets to everybody we knew had COVID. We were sending quercetin, zinc, flaxseed oil, the vitamin D, a lot of different nutraceuticals. We'd send these care packages. Not one person that we send these care packages died on us. Not one person ended up in the hospital. I had one friend who reached out late, and she ended up in the hospital, but she was okay. But so even the nutraceuticals were working. But they were suppressing that. They weren't telling you to take any vitamins. They weren't telling you about vitamin D. We found out about that afterwards.
And they were calling you names if you said you did. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Nick Catarano about the damage done by the COVID vaccine. Nick, we're running out of time. How can listeners get in touch with you to plug in, learn more, get some ideas of how to get involved?
Well, my original website is goofyvaccine.com. You can send me an email on there. But I've teamed up with Truth for Health Freedom, which is Dr. Valit, who's an amazing doctor who is also working with Vaccine Injured. We have a website up. It's called vaxdamage.org, vaxdamage.org. And the Vaccine Injured, what we're trying to do is encourage all the vaccine injured. The VIR system by the CDC was created as a warning sign to send out the signals that it's a failed operation. They control it. They've manipulated it. Only doctors can input into there, which it limits it. So we're trying to track the data, and we're also trying to help with resources. And ultimately, we want to see if we can unite all the community of people that are vaccine injured and the families that have lost ones of these vaccines. And we want to kind of organize them and then help them stand together so nobody can be signaled out, because there's a lot of fear. I think Dr. McCullough had done a survey asking the vaccine injured what was their greatest fear of speaking out, and they were scared as a result of losing more. So they have lost so much, they're scared of losing more. And it's a real shame that these people are out there in the shadows and remaining quiet. So we want to do what we can to help them organize. And, you know, there are great organizations like React 19 that are doing that, but that our efforts are at vaxdamage.org.
Nick, thank you. Thank you for joining us today, but thank you for your concerns for our nation. More than your concerns, you're putting your feet to your prayers. And that's what we all need to do. We need to get active, and we need to get active now. Nick, thank you. I'm proud to call you a friend. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you, Dennis.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm. Twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time to review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome back, Diane. Glad to have my team member with me again.
Thank you, Denny. And as always, this is an honor and a privilege to share what we do at the Garden State Film Festival with your audience.
Hey, we work together so well. Diane, I can see why you're so involved with the Garden State Film Festival. The films you send us are so interesting and thoughtful. They're amazing. And you get to deal with many, many more than just the ones I see.
Right. That's cool. Just so you're aware, we get over 1,000 submissions every single year. So, I'm a little bit crazy because I love them. I'm addicted to watching them. And you can see what a great joy it is for me to cull out some of the very best ones.
And I'll reinforce what you just said. I think you're more than a little bit crazy.
There you go.
Well, this month's show is The Silent Child. It's quite a story. I have a brother-in-law who's deaf and who teaches American Sign Language. So I have a bit of understanding of living with deaf people. And it really can be pretty easy once you just adopt to it. So tell us your thoughts about this movie.
Well, again, I think it's more than just about being a deaf child. It's about acceptance and involvement in whatever the situation is in your life. In this particular case, it was a deaf girl, and the person that only person that was making an effort towards her, you know, her progress in becoming able to live in society was her teacher. And it was just a little wake up call in my mind to being aware of adapting to be helpful to people or to make a difference.
And that's particularly true if that person's in your family.
Yes.
I mean, goodness gracious. Okay. Well, here's some thoughts from the viewers about this movie. Started off, a lady riding a bike along a country road in the winter comes to a nice house. Yeah, that you don't know what that is until it starts and happens. The family seems happy, interactive, and wealthy. There are Mercedes cars outside. So this is not a poor family. One small child is deaf. It takes a minute. It took me a minute to sort that out, but that was clearly the message. And the lady writing up turns out to be a teacher for the deaf child. Yep. And the family seems to see the deaf child as a pain, as a problem. Yeah, I saw that all the way through, too. Did you see that?
And that was the point of, being aware of, well, that's compassion and grace. You know what I mean? That's something we need more of in this world.
Well, and I can't even imagine just ignoring, putting down, not wanting to help in every way possible a family member, much less certainly friends and people in society, but a family member? Wow.
It does happen, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the child seems to only want to watch television. And obviously,
well, that's all she knew up until she got the teacher. They just stuck her in front of the TV, and she was pretty much non-responsive.
Well, yeah. Why would a child even know to be responsive if nobody really cared about her?
Well, exactly.
So the teacher sits in front of her and smiles and starts interacting, takes her outside for walks, feeding the ducks, swimming, stuff like that. That must have been an exciting day or series of days for that young child, because I got a feeling that never happened before.
No, that was obvious.
And then the teacher is successful in teaching some sign language, and the child likes her and begins to communicate. Yeah, I mean, that's what she was there for, but she obviously was good at it too, because it, you know, if you've never been exposed to sign language and somebody shows up and smiles at you and starts waving their hands in front of you, that person better know how to teach, and particularly a young child. But obviously this teacher did know how to teach and took the time to do it. So they got a good teacher. Whoever it was that hired her picked the right person, right?
Mm-hmm.
The teacher is successful in teaching some sign language, and the child clearly likes her and is communicating somewhat. And I relate to that, because with my deaf brother-in-law, I've been trying to learn for a decade or more American Sign Language, and the problem is I only see him once a year. So, so I learn a little, and then I don't use it for 11 months. So it's not the easiest thing to learn, but once you do learn some of these things, you can communicate, and it does work.
Well, and the technology has made a big difference. Now there's a lot of people that communicate via their phones with texting and such. You know what I mean?
Oh,
so,
yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's been a, you know, a major breakthrough for Americans with disabilities. So,
you know, through all this, the family seems to ignore the progress and isn't willing to learn sign language or anything. And when the teacher asks if the school will be able to handle sign language, that doesn't go anywhere either, because the family doesn't want to learn sign language and they want the child to learn how to read lips. And the teacher explains at some point she probably can, but she can't right now. It's one thing, you know, it's too much at one time. And it gets her fired.
That was disheartening.
But that does show where the family was coming from. And then the teacher goes to the school to see the child, and through the gate they communicate, and it's over. You know, I know from my experience with my brother-in-law, he's been putting up with my sister for like 30 years now, he can communicate. And we can communicate. It takes a little adapting, but we get together as a family. We're a family. So it can be done, but it takes a commitment on the part of everybody around them to be reasonable, be helpful. I mean, if I had lost my leg and you needed to open doors for me, you wouldn't open doors because I'd be a pain. I mean, this is crazy, isn't it?
Right. But again, the purpose of our film of the month is to thinking, and I think it brings up the whole disability being, for instance, in our organization, there's a whole training we go through about, you know, what's the correct way to interact with people with a disability. And
sure.
I think that awareness, let us just have awareness and I think we've accomplished our mission.
Yes, ma'am. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. And the film festival won't be till next year, but take a minute on where you stand now. Are you still taking films for it?
Yes. If you know a filmmaker or a composer or an actor, please have them go to www.gsff.org. It's our call for entries is open until November 1st for our 2024 festival. And we hope to see a lot of the listeners, friends and relatives, and possibly themselves submit to us. It would be great.
And also come to the festival the end of March, right?
Yes, March 21 through 24 in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
And it is amazing. And if you forget all of that, contact me, Denny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com. I got all the information. Diane, thank you. Thank you for being a great member of the team. Thank you for being a good friend. Thank you for constantly bringing up movies that make us think, make us interact, make us... Well, that was the whole idea, wasn't it?
Yes,
we wanted to challenge people to think about things and consider things. Thank you, Diane. God bless
you. Thank you, Denny.
Until next month.
Thank you.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? And once your ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it is mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Patty, an Air Force mom and history buff, really appreciated the general and the battle of the month.
Patty, I'm a history buff too, but I learn every time I work with General Chris Petty. He's great.
And Peter, son of an Air Force dad, is really freaked out by the horrible things that are happening in our nation because of our nation's nonsense border crisis. Why can't we just close the border like it's been?
Peter, it's because our president and our Congress won't enforce the laws of our nation. We haven't begun to see the horrible results that this wide open border situation is going to cause for us. It's going to be bad. It's going to get worse. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 1 September 1775, Richard Penn and Arthur Lee, representing the Continental Congress, present the so-called Olive Branch Petition to the Earl of Dartmouth in England. Britain's King George III, however, refused to receive the petition, which, written by John Dickinson, appealed directly to the king and expressed hope for reconciliation between the colonies and Great Britain. Not surprisingly, this led to our war for independence.
It sure did. And on 1 September 1864, during the Civil War, Union General William Tecumseh Sherman laid siege to Atlanta, Georgia, a critical Confederate hub, shelling civilians and cutting off supply lines. The Confederates retreated, destroying the city's munitions as they went. On November 15th of that year, Sherman's troops burned much of the city before continuing their march through the South. Sherman's Atlanta campaign was one of the most decisive victories of the Civil War.
And on 29 August 1916, Congress provided for the first time the mobilization of the Lighthouse Service in time of war by authorizing the president, quote, whenever in his judgment a sufficient national emergency exists to transfer to the service and jurisdiction of the Navy Department or of the War Department such vessels, equipment, stations, and personnel of the Lighthouse Service as he may deem to the best interest of the country. Later on, the Lighthouse Service became a part of our Coast Guard.
Sure did. On 31 August 1935, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the Neutrality Act, or Senate Joint Resolution No. 173, which called, quote, an expression of the desire to avoid any action that might include the U.S. in war, end quote. This reflected the will of most Americans who remember World War I not to get involved in another European war. The signing came at a time when the newly installed fascist governments in Europe were beginning to beat the drums of war.
A lot of wars start out in Europe, don't they, Colonel?
They do. We're such nice people. We don't do that.
That's right. Nothing bad happens in America.
No.
And on 1 September 1939, German forces bombard Poland on land and from the air, as Adolf Hitler sought to regain lost territory and ultimately rule Poland. This began World War II.
And it sure did. And on the 28th of August, 1941, during World War II, over 23,000 Hungarian Jews were murdered by the Gestapo in occupied Ukraine.
And on 30 August, 1945, General Douglas MacArthur landed in Japan to oversee the formal surrender ceremony and to organize the post-war Japanese government. He, in fact, ran Japan for several years as he reorganized their government and economy. Then it was returned to the Japanese people.
Sure was. And on the 29th of August, 1946, the USS Nevada was decommissioned. The Nevada was the lead ship of the two Nevada-class battleships. Her sister ship was the Oklahoma. Launched in 1914, Nevada was a leap forward in dreadnought technology. Four of her new features would be included in almost every subsequent U.S. battleship. Triple gun turrets, oil in the place of coal for fuel, geared steam turbines for greater range, and the all-or-nothing armor principle. These features made the Nevada the first U.S. Navy super dreadnought. During the last few months of World War I, Nevada was based in Ireland to protect supply convoys that were sailing to and from Great Britain. In World War II, she was one of the battleships trapped when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. She was the only battleship to get underway during the attack, making the ship, quote, the only bright spot in an otherwise dismal and depressing morning for the U.S. Still, she was hit by one torpedo and at least six bombs, forcing her to be beached. Subsequently, salvaged and modernized at the Puget Sound Navy Yard, Nevada served as a convoy escort in the Atlantic and as a fire support ship in four amphibious assaults, including the Normandy landings, the invasions of southern France, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa. At the end of World War II, the Navy decided that Nevada was too old to be retained, so they assigned her to be a target ship in the atomic experiments that were being conducted at the Bikini Atoll. After being hit by a blast from the first atomic bomb, she was still afloat, but heavily damaged and radioactive. She was decommissioned on the 29th of August, 1946, and sunk during naval gunfire practice in 1948.
And on 30 August, 1966, during the Vietnam War, Hanoi Radio announced that Deputy Premier Li had signed an agreement with Peking whereby the People's Republic of China provided additional economic and technical aid to North Vietnam. China had already been providing support to the communists in Vietnam since the war against the French. When we became decisively involved after the Gulf of Tonkin incident, China increased the support to both North Vietnam and the insurgents in South Vietnam. It was this support and that provided by the Soviet Union that permitted the North Vietnamese to prosecute the war against South Vietnam and our forces there.
Yep. In a real war, we should have attacked them, but it wasn't a real war, I guess. On the 20th of August, 1968, during the Vietnam War, at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, tens of thousands of protesters against the war battled police in the streets while the Democratic Party tore itself to shreds concerning a platform statement on Vietnam. In one day and one night, the Cold War positive consensus that had dominated American thinking since the late 1940s was shattered.
And on 1 September 1969, Muammar al-Qaddafi, a 27-year-old Libyan army captain, led a successful military coup against King Idris I of Libya. Idris was deposed, and Qaddafi was named chairman of Libya's new governing body, the Revolutionary Command Council. He knew how to be a dictator.
He sure did. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for a self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing. And now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a man tried to rob a gas station in West Michigan by threatening the clerk with a box cutter, but the robber didn't see the customer behind him. The customer calmly drew his legally owned firearm while holding a six-pack of beer in his left hand and fired seven shots at the criminal, hitting him three times. The entire event was captured on video. The gun-toting customer then held the criminal at bay until police arrived to arrest him. The prosecutor's office has decided not to pursue charges against the customer who fired shots at the robbery suspect. The robber survived the incident and was charged with armed robbery and is being held on a $100,000 bond.
Thanks, Colonel. I saw some really good things with this incident, and I have nothing but praise for this armed citizen. But I also saw some opportunities for improvement. First, I watched the video on this one, and it was truly amazing to see how calm the customer was as he drew his firearm. There appeared to be no hesitation on his part. He saw the masked man in front of the clerk holding something in his hand, which caused the clerk to raise his hands in surrender. Second, the customer backed up, creating distance and putting a candy bar rack between himself and the bad guy. This didn't provide cover, but it did hide him and give him the element of surprise. The customer then shot three times before maneuvering to a different position and shooting three more times. He maneuvered again and shot a final time. Third, and here's where I see a chance for improvement. The customer drew his gun from his pocket, but the pocket holster came out with the gun, forcing him to waste precious time removing the pistol from the holster. He needs to get a better pocket holster that will give him a smooth and flawless draw stroke. The pocket holster is supposed to stay inside the pocket. And fourth, he shot the gun one-handed while holding on to a six-pack of beer. That explains in part why he only hit the man three of seven shots. You'll always be a better shot if you plant yourself in a firm stance and shoot two-handed with a strong grip. He probably shot one-handed because of the stress he was feeling. I always tell my students that alcohol and guns don't mix. Folks, if this ever happens to you, drop the beer and get into the best stance possible, take good aim two-handed, and then fire. All in all, this man did an excellent job defending the clerk who was being threatened with an edged weapon from contact distance.
Frontlines of Freedom salutes this alert customer who stuck up for the terrified clerk. He sure did a good job. Our movie of the month is The Silent Child. We just reviewed it. You could still go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Navy SEAL Tom Sheeby will discuss serving our nation. Then Air Force vet Ron Kraft will discuss how his plane towed a jet fighter to safety. And Peter Klein will present Boots to Books. And Quentin Roberts, our football co-host, will discuss the upcoming Service Academy football season. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation to return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.